Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. I'm Allison Klein. We're coming to you live from Austin, Texas at the OpenStack Summit. And I'm very happy to be joined by Jonathan Donaldson, VP of the Data Center Group and GM of Software Defined Infrastructure at Intel. Welcome back.
How you doing, Allison?
I'm doing great. Jonathan, you've been quite busy since we last talked. We had a very exciting Cloud Day event. Why don't you tell me what's going on within the world of SDI at Intel and where you're seeing traction in the marketplace in terms of innovation in cloud computing?
At the 331 on our Cloud Day event, we took the challenge to start to combine two different worlds. So the world of the hyperscale, the Google-style infrastructure with Kubernetes and CoreOS, and we took the world of OpenStack, which is more the infrastructure as a service type of delivery model. And we took the challenge to kind of pull those things together to solve each other's issues. One of the things that we looked at when we started looking at OpenStack and some of the challenges that all the operators were having out there, as well as the vendors that put together, you know, the packaging and the offerings around that, was it's kind of complex to maintain, right? It's complex to stand up. It's complex to some extent to upgrade. And when we started to strip away the right side of it where it says, okay, this delivers the service itself, right? It's infrastructure as a service. And we just started looking at the characteristics. We realized very quickly, well, this is actually just a complex application, right? It's a complex set of services. And then we looked at Kubernetes, which is purpose-built for dealing with complex sets of services that create an application. And we came up with the idea that if we combine Kubernetes and OpenStack's control plane, we could actually probably solve some very, very important issues in OpenStack itself, and then also kind of enhance the delivery model for how compute is consumed in the data center. And so we tasked some engineers from Intel and our Poland side to come up with a proof of concept, and they delivered just beyond our wildest dreams. The demo today was very, very well received, and the amount of questions that we're getting around, wow, that actually makes a lot of sense. And, you know, how did you do that? And will this be showing up in a product near me kind of thing? You know, it's proven that we've really kind of hit the mark with delivering on the innovation for that side.
Obviously, there's a business reason why we're driving integration and running OpenStack on top of Kubernetes. Can you tell me a little bit about why an enterprise would be so attracted to this?
When we looked at some of the barriers to adoption, one of those is the ease of integration into their current IT architecture, right? The ease of how do they stand up their own private cloud? How do they maintain it and operate it? And it's really only valuable to them if they can operate it in such a way that it actually lowers their costs and lowers the complexity of how they deliver IT services. And this was one of those, you know, kind of ripe areas for innovation that if we get it right, and it looks like we're certainly on our path there, it can actually deliver on those operational expenses and on those operational complexities that are one of the big barriers. And so from Intel's perspective, our goal is to unleash tens of thousands of new clouds, and this is one of the big speed bumps on the way there. And so if we can solve it, we think we can accelerate private cloud and hybrid cloud.
What are the limitations that customers are pushing up against that by running OpenStack as a service within Kubernetes, they can avoid addressing?
A couple things. So let's look at high availability of services. So the way that OpenStack is typically deployed today is you'll have your server. Your server will have your bare metal Linux operating system on it, and then you'll have some set of executables on there that actually deliver the services, whether it be the Nova API for scheduling compute jobs or Neutron service for the networking overlay technologies or Cinder or Swift, the storage services, Keystone for authentication. Those are all kind of individual executables, so individual applications that run against that bare metal operating system. And so when you go to upgrade those or to first instantiate those, or you go to set them up in high availability, because you certainly don't want the thing that starts your VMs and schedules those across your servers to go down and not come back. When you go to do that in kind of today's world prior to containerization and the services that Kubernetes give it, you have to kind of do a little bit of voodoo and, you know, make sure the planets are aligned, and you have to rely on various other applications to go make that highly available. So you'll look at placing that service behind some sort of load balancer application. And then you have to worry about making sure you have multiple load balancer applications that are monitoring mm-hmm. each other. So as an operator, the complexity spirals out of control
very,
very quickly.
And nothing could ever go wrong with something like that.
Right, exactly. Instead of having maybe 14 different ways to do availability, the before and after of this is a very highly complex, intertwined spaghetti mess, right, of availability. Whereas with Kubernetes, it's one clean, API-driven, scheduled operation for availability, right? You saw today with Alex. If a service goes down, Kubernetes says, service is down, let me start a new, fresh one, mm-hmm. and almost the blink of an eye. Same thing for rolling upgrades. Previously, you'd have to go start that upgrade path by standing up. Instead of going to that same server where you may have had that service running, let's say it's Nova, you have to go to a new server because you can't run two instances of Nova on the same server cleanly. You'd have to go to a new server, stand up the Nova instance, and then quickly cut over to that one, mm-hmm. right? And so there's almost always downtime involved with that. Whereas with Kubernetes, the way, again, it's built to do this type of thing for microservices, you would start up your new version of that service. They're all being load balanced, and so some of those connections to that service would start going to the new version. You monitor its health. It all looks good, and you give it the thumbs up. Then you kill the old service, mm-hmm. and then you instantiate new versions of the new service, right? It's that whole rollback, roll-forward model. So a lot of the problems that we are trying to solve in OpenStack through many different paths and differently in almost every different project are now handled by something that's built to handle that, purpose-built from the outside.
How important is it that this is being done in a true open-source environment with Kubernetes and OpenStack?
Being done in an open-source environment, being done inside the community, both communities, right, is incredibly valuable from the approach that we want to move all of OpenStack forward, that whole community forward. We want to put some of these nagging problems for these types of application delivery models, the way that OpenStack is delivered as a set of services, we want to put that behind us and really start to focus on what are the new things that we can go do with OpenStack in a private and hybrid cloud space.
When you look at Cloud for All, you know, focused on deployment of tens of thousands of new clouds based on reducing the barriers for ease of deployment. And obviously, this is a big part of that.
Right.
But Cloud for All is larger than this. Can you tell me a little bit about the progress that you're making and your team is making in driving those new cloud deployments?
We're seeing really, really good traction. We're seeing lots of good reports from our field sales, from our partner sales organizations, from the customers themselves. Not only are they deploying private cloud, they're either, you know, they've started testing or that's actually gone into production. So we had done the TCO analysis on all this, right? How good is this really for our customers? And when they actually adopt it in this style, we see kind of that first wave of TCO reductions about 25%. Mm-hmm. And then when they get to the full SDI where they have software-defined networking and software-defined storage, and it's all programmatically done from the networking perspective, everything else, they tend to get that 60% TCO reduction through that automation characteristics. And some of the early reports we've had coming back over the last couple quarters and some of the ones that have just popped up at the various events where customers are talking about their success, it tracks right along with that, right? We've had the 25% from a couple different customers that have just started the journey, and we've seen some of the 50 and 60% from customers that have kind of gone all the way.
Jonathan, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I learn something new every time I do. Thank you for being on the program today. One final question. If folks want to continue the conversation with you, are you online? Is there a place to engage with you?
I am. I'm on Twitter. It's at jdonalds, J-D-O-N-A-L-D-S. It's usually a mixture of Intel-isms and travel. I travel a lot, so I always like to be a bit humorous about that. But that's usually the best place to find me. If they PM me there, then I can always reach out to them if they have questions.
Thanks so much.
Certainly.
Visit ChipChat online at intel.com/chipchat. And for more information on data center technologies, visit intel.com/bigdata, intel.com/cloud, and intel.com/datacenteroptimization.